Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the tyranny of experts right after this. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity from bank deposits to medical visits has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American. That's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. A study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems. Those systems contain 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, your bank, your insurance company, business and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for in the first place? Well, knowing how this information is being gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep, personal and private, actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package, and let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free of charge. Now, that number again, 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page and download it right there. All right, we're talking about an odd subject here. It's the tyranny of experts. Experts, the people that we trust, the bankers, the lawyers, the preachers, all of the people out there that are the professionals that we have confidence in. And here's little Georgie coming along saying, hey, these guys are all lying to you. That's right. I come along and say, hey, your preacher's lying to you. He's telling you about Jesus and his birthday on December the 25th. That's a damn lie. And the reason I say it's a damn lie is because he knows better. See, when somebody tells you a lie that they actually believe, that's called a constructive fraud. Fraud is a lie. It's just a legal term that describes a liar. Well, that's a fraud. Well, you know, it's more polite than saying, well, that's a lie. Now, Mark Twain, he had a way of putting it. He said, there are liars, there are damn liars, and then there's statisticians. You know, there's three classes of liars here. Now, I call them damn liars because they know better. But, you know, they're not doing it for no good reason. For instance, when you take your child into the pediatrician, you know, your kid's got a runny nose or something like that, and the pediatrician says, oh, well, he needs his vaccinations. And so here's his shot record, and so you shoot your kid up with two or three more vaccines. And, you know, only one kid in 67 now comes down with autism, and so he says it's perfectly safe. The odds are 67 to 1 that your kid's going to get autism. Used to be 100,000 to 1, then it dropped to 10,000 to 1, then 1,000 to 1, you know, then 100 to 1. Now it's down to 67 to 1. By the time we get up to 50 vaccines for a child by age 5, I think we can probably have about 1 in 25 or something like that. If we keep working at this, we can give every kid born in America autism. That's what we've done with cancer. See, we started out 1 in 33 would get cancer in his lifetime 110 years ago, 1900. Today it's 1 out of 2, and they tell us by 2020 it'll be 1 out of 1. Every single person in America is going to statistically now get cancer at least once in his lifetime. And the experts tell us, hey, we're looking for a cure to cancer, and we're just right on the threshold. Just keep marching and running and donating and giving us more money. And you know. And so here we are. We're giving all this money. We're paying all these taxes to pay all these researchers to find a cure to cancer. We already got 14. My question would be, well, what are you going to do with a 15th, a 16th, or a 17th cure to cancer? You got 14 cures right now. 14. Most of them discovered by the AMA and then buried, you know, just buried. And then anybody that comes up with an alternative approach in healthcare, they lock them up in jail. These are the experts that are doing this. They're not doing that for no good reason. Cancer is a $500 billion a year industry. The last thing we want to do is to screw up a $500 cash cow every year. I mean, cancer is a cash cow for the AMA. That's what the bottom line is, and the experts aren't going to give that up. No way in hell. Now, for you and I, the Joe Sixpacks and the Sally Housewives out here, how does that benefit us? Wouldn't it be good if you and I knew what these 14 cancer cures were so that just in case we came down with cancer, we would have some alternative other than the experts using cut, burn, and poison, which works? You know, cut, burn, and poison works 37% of the time. So if you go to your doctor and he gives you the full regimen of chemotherapy, surgery, and radiation, 37% of the time it'll work. And here's what they call work. If you don't die within 5 years, they call that a cure. If you die in 5 years and one day, that's a cure. If you die in 6 years, that's a cure. I had an old buddy of mine. He went to the doctor. He wasn't feeling good. I was talking to his brother one day. He said, "Do you know that Rich died?" And I said, "Yeah, I just talked to his wife. I called Rich first. And his wife told me that Rich had died last year. And last time I talked to Rich, Michael, he never said that he had cancer. He never told me. He didn't need to. But he had it, and he already knew it. And his brother said, "Yeah, Rich died. He didn't go to the doctor. He didn't take care of himself." Rich knew he had cancer, and then he went home and he didn't do anything. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. He smoked. He drank. He lived his life. God love him. He just had a great time. He always had a smile on his face, and he was always happy. Oh, Rich was. Yep, he lived for 6 years with cancer. He finally died. He died of cancer, which is statistically the average. If you have cancer and you go home and you don't do anything about it, the doctor says, "You've got 6 months to live." He's usually lying to you. You probably have 2 or 3 years to live. Maybe you do only have 6 months. But on average, you know, if you take all the people that walk in and they say, "Kiss off, I'm not going to do anything," they live for 6 years. If you take the full range of services that the doctor has to offer, your average lifespan will be 18 months. It'll cost you $100,000 to buy cut, burn, and poison. That's chemotherapy, surgery, and radiation. Average cost, $100,000. The people who have insurance are the ones that live the shortest. I'll bet you that Rich didn't have any health insurance. And he said, "Why should I spend $100,000 of my money and I'm going to die anyway?" Cancer is a death sentence. That's the bottom line. And your doctor will tell you that. If you'll ask him, "Do you have a cure for cancer?" "No." Do you have a cause? Do you know what causes cancer?" "No." "Do you have a treatment?" "Oh, you bet. You bet. We got a treatment, and we'll treat you. And 37% of the time, we can keep you alive for 5 years. Hell, if you do absolutely nothing, you can stay alive for 6. But you see, when you die at the end of 6 years from cancer, they don't call that a cancer cure. You live for 5 years. No. So they don't do that. See, they got a double standard. It's not ethical. It's not honest, but that's the standard that you have. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. If you had a car, and your car isn't running right, and you took it into your mechanic, and you said, "Hey, Bob, do you hear that engine?" Yeah, I hear. "Do you know what's wrong with my car?" And the mechanic says, "No, I don't." "Do you know how to fix it?" He says, no, I don't." "Well, could you work on my car?" "You bet. You know, for $25 an hour, I'll work on your car until you run out of money." Would you leave your car with a mechanic that told you, "I don't know what's wrong with it, and I don't know how to fix it"? But yet you people will go to the doctor who says, "I don't know what causes cancer, and I don't know how to cure it, but I've got a treatment for $100,000. You people will spend $100,000 on that quack, and you call him a medical doctor. You've got the wrong label. See, the quacks are the guys that are the paid experts, and the real doctors are the guys that have the 14 cures to cancer that you lock up in prison. Now, that's where reality's at. Now, you explain that to me. You tell me why you do that. Well, the author here calls it the tyranny of the experts, and it's because they've persuaded us to believe them, and we do. My God, we believe these experts. And so last time we were talking about the experts who are dealing with cigarettes and cigarette smoking, and now we're talking about this thing called ETS. That's where you're smoking. You go into a bar and you're getting secondhand smoke. They call it ETS. Studies are legion that link the health risks of secondhand smoke to cancer, sudden infant death syndrome, heart disease, and every other ailment imaginable. These studies are flawed because they cannot be controlled, and yet they epitomize how there is no scientific methodology available that I know of that will give us the data to determine if a smoker does harm to a non-smoker. Of course, scientists can come up with statistical models that will provide numbers that will imply certainly and certainty where certainty does not exist. Now, the Washington Times on the 27th of November, 1995, reported on a new service that accuses government and anti-smoking groups of making unsubstantiated claims about the health hazards of secondhand smoke. The Congressional Research Service claims there's no scientific evidence to support the EPA claim or the EPA estimate that environmental tobacco smoke, that is ETS, environmental tobacco smoke, causes over 3,000 lung cancer deaths among non-smokers and 150,000 to 300,000 cases of respiratory infection in infants and young children. Now, I've read these numbers before, and I've recited them over the air, probably erroneously. I didn't do it to you on purpose, but I got to admit, like this author here, I didn't realize myself how I had been duped by these experts, because I believed that these experts had actually conducted tests and studies, and that the numbers that they were espousing were in fact verifiable. Now I find out that over the years, reporting to you on this broadcast, that I've been lying to you. But then I told you I was a liar years ago, remember? I never came on the air and claimed that I was telling you the truth. But I try hard. You know, we try to be as factual and we try to be as accurate here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review as we possibly can. It's just a fetish with me. It isn't because I really give a rat's ass one way or the other whether I lie to you or tell you the truth. But I years ago took a look at this and I said to myself, well, instead of lying to people, why don't you tell them the truth? Because it's funnier. You get a bigger bang for the buck telling some guy the truth than you do lying to him. That's why I like this quotation from Winston Churchill here. I read it to you yesterday. You know, Winston Churchill, here's what he says. He says, when I get the facts, I twist them to fit my position. And I did that for years. And I said, let me be the opposite. Let me be the iconoclast here. Let me get the facts and let me just report them. You know, just let them, let it fall where it may. And so I've reported these also, and I have covered myself a little bit. I said, you know, I'm presuming that these numbers are true, accurate, and correct. I'm getting them off the internet. I'm getting them out of this study or that study or some other study. But now here's a guy, a very prestigious guy, who used to be in the government, and he says, well, we take these facts and we twist them to suit our positions, and there aren't any credible statistics. And these people that are claiming that they're credible statistics have never run any of these tests, and in many cases they're not even testable. It's totally subjective. There's nothing objective about it. It's totally subjective. This is what we believe, and this is what we're putting out there in the newspaper. And of course, you and I, we read the newspaper, and then I pick up these papers, and I come out here, and I speak with authority, and I say, here are the numbers. Read them and weep. See? And then we come back a little later, we find out, oops, well, that wasn't true. So let me apologize up front, you know, if you feel like I've lied to you and I tricked you over here. I didn't do it on purpose, but, you know, that's the way life is, isn't it? Now, like the anti-alcohol advocates, whose exaggerated findings on FAS, that's fetal alcohol syndrome. See, I like to use these letters, so FAS, fetal alcohol syndrome, led the government to advise pregnant women not to drink alcohol. Non-smoking advocates continue to use unsubstantiated studies to induce the public and policymakers to treat smokers as pariahs. Now, I agree with that. I'm an anti-smoker. I'm a non-smoker, an anti-smoker, and I would like to see a non-smoking environment. I went into the Outback the other night. I like to eat at the Outback every once in a while. And the Outback is a bar. It's a bar and a restaurant. And so they've got smoking and non-smoking. And so the waitress sat us down next to the smoking section. In other words, there's a wall that runs down between the bar and then the guys that are smoking on the other side. Now, I personally am not offended by people that smoke. And I used to smoke. You know. Now, my wife, she used to smoke, but she's offended. She hates smoke. She didn't like it. And we're sitting there and she says, do you smell that? And I said, yeah, I can smell the smoke coming in from the bar. And she says, well, I want to move. That's my wife. I want to move. And so she got up, just moved our stuff across the aisle to the next wall over. And then when the waitress came back, she was wondering, well, what happened to these people here? You know, we sat you down, took your drinks order. And so she sees us, oh, you moved over here. Yeah, because we don't like the smoke over there. That's the secondhand smoke that they're talking about. And quite frankly, I would like to see them take all of that, every restaurant in town, and run all you smokers out of town on a rail. But you know, to be honest and fair, you know, why should I take away your pleasure of smoking? Who am I to tell you that you shouldn't smoke? And the Outback can solve that problem by simply moving us to the other side of the room. They've got good air conditioning. And once we moved, we didn't have a problem. But you know, when you're sitting in the row of tables that are next to the smokers, you know, you can't very well beat them out of it. So I'm going to be a little more broad-minded, and I'm going to say, well, you know, I think smoking's wrong. I think it's bad for you, and I don't think you should do it. But that's a choice for you to make, and that's what we're advocating here, freedom of choice. We think that you smokers ought to have a right to smoke and kill yourself. I think that all of you sodomites out there should have a right to practice sodomy and kill yourselves with AIDS at age 39. I think it's a bad choice. That's why I don't do it. Our Creator told us not to. Common sense and the evidence that we see, you know, at least to this moment in time, this is some evidence I think you can take a little assurance in. I mean, you know, you take people that are sodomites, and then they die, and then you well, how old was this guy? Well, he was 52. And Joel Wallach did this, and he said, he put out a tape, it says, dead doctors don't lie. What's the average lifespan of the average allopathic medical doctor? And age is 58. I was dumbfounded. You mean to tell me that the doctors that we're going to, the paid professionals, the experts, you know, yeah, the guys that are prescribing all the medications and so on, they die on average at age 58. Now, you'd think that if medicine and doctors were good for us, that those guys should be living to be 96. I'll bet you that Jack LaLanne doesn't go to medical doctors. I'll just bet you. Ask him. He's 92, last time I saw a number, 92. He's a health food freak. He's already beaten his 70-year average. He's lived an extra 22 years. Hell, he may live to be, you know, an extra 10 or 15 years, I don't know. But here's the moral to the story. These experts over here, when we take a look at their lifestyle, when we take a look at the actual numbers, we find out, hey, this doesn't add up. Medical doctors dying at age 58 on average, and you and I, just Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife on average, we live to be 75. We live a full 17 years longer than the average medical doctor. Think how much longer we might live if we didn't go to medical doctors. Medical doctors don't have the answer to disease. If they had the answer to disease, they'd be able to tell us, yes, we know what causes cancer, and yes, we know how to cure it, and that's why you're here, and I'm happy to see you. But he can't say that. Now, going on here, he says, crucial to the accuracy of scientific study is controlling for variables. For example, if a person smokes X number of cigarettes and does so around a non-smoker, the variables to control for would be the setting and the ventilation system, air streams, depth of inhaling and exhaling of both parties, emotional strengths and weaknesses, which affect the immunological system, and hundreds of other variables. Even so, the advocates use the flawed studies on ETS to promote their cause, gain power, and feel good about themselves. No better illustration exists than cigarettes to show the tyranny of the experts. All right, so it's not just with global warming or tobacco or abortion. It's everything. These experts are in every field. They're in economics, and they're telling us, my God, if we don't bail the banks out, the economy will collapse. Boys and girls, the economy is going to collapse anyway. You didn't need to give the banks a dollar, and the economy would collapse. It's just that it would have collapsed sooner. And you didn't want the economy to collapse at all. The collapse of the economy is like death. It's terrifying. It is fearful, fearsome. We don't want it to happen. I don't want it to happen, but it's going to happen anyway. And there's nothing that I can do to stop it or advance it. And there's nothing that you can do to stop it or advance it. It's coming. It's coming because historically, fiat currencies always collapse. They always have in the past. They're in the process of doing it now, and they're always going to do it in the future because that's the way it's programmed. It's like trying to drive your car at 90 miles an hour around a 35-mile-an-hour turn. Your car will always fly off the highway and off out into the weeds. Why? It's called the law of inertia, the law of gravity. It's the way it is. I can't create it. I can't stop it. Neither can you. So let's make up our minds. When you're driving down the road with some guy and you see a sign that says 35 miles an hour, look over at the driver and say, I don't believe that sign. I think it's full of lies. Take the next turn at 65 and let's see how it comes out. I think you'd be better off if you slowed down to 35, but then, you know, hell, don't let me tell you how to drive. The same thing is true with cigarette smoke. Same thing is true with vaccinations. Same thing is true, you know, with the economy, borrowing money from the banks, paying interest and usury. There's a cause and effect relationship that we get from the actions that we take, and you and I are the proximate cause of our own injury. If you want to go around the 35-mile-an-hour turn at 65, have at it. But the highway traffic safety officials, you know, put up that 35-mile-an-hour sign out there as a warning to you that, hey, listen, you know, there's gravity, there's inertia. There's natural law at play here, you know, and this turn is pretty sharp, and maybe it's not banked as much as it ought to be, and, you know, you take your chances. Most of us driving our cars down the road, buckle our seat belts, and drive 35 around the 35-mile-an-hour turn. Well, you know, not much over 35, 40, 45 maybe. But, you know, we're not trying to do them at 65, 70, or 80, are we? All right. Now, the experts over here, we find out now from this little series of programs here, have an agenda. This is what we talked about in the last program. I said, hey, listen, global warming has an agenda. And the experts are lying to us, and they're lying to us for a purpose. They're getting paid for it. So when scientists tell us that global warming threatens the world, well, okay, maybe it does. They say, well, global warming is caused by CO2. That's false. Well, they say global warming is caused by CO2 and is caused by man, and we have to shut down our steel mills and power plants and we got to tax these guys to encourage them to close them down. Hell, that's not going to happen. Half of the electric power in the company is produced by coal. And the biggest coal seam in the world is sitting out here in Wyoming. And the powers that be own the coal. They're going to burn every damn ton of it and charge you for it. But in the process, they need more money. And they know that coming to you and raising taxes is going to make you mad as hell. So they're going to raise the tax on the power company. The power company is going to raise your electric rates. And you'll pay the electric rates because that's what the experts have taught you to do. And we went to public school to learn how to follow instructions and do what we're taught and to believe the experts, which is what this expert is pointing out, and that's what I wanted to point out to you. We're being manipulated like puppets, and I've been manipulated like a puppet, and I've cited some of these studies in the past myself. I read this article here. I'm going to give you the site of the article again. so that you can get the book for yourself. And I thought it was pretty revelatory. The guy's name is Morris E. Chaffetz, C-H-A-F-E-T-Z, M-D. He's a psychiatrist, psychologist, medical doctor, a former official in the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. He is the founding director of the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism in the United States. At one time, he was in the Department of Health and Human Services. He is currently president and founder of the Health Education Foundation, an organization that relates health to lifestyle in Washington, D.C. Now, the name of the book is, this book is called The Tyranny of Experts. The Tyranny of Experts, Blowing the Whistle on the Cult of Expertise, published by Madison Books, New York, 1996. And it's available through the National Book Network. So if you put down National Book Network, and their phone number is 1-800-462-6420. And the price was $19.95, U.S. dollars. That's 1-800-462-6420. I think it's worth the money. I think the article hits the nail on the head. Now, get this ISBN number down. Let's suppose that that phone number doesn't work and blah, blah, blah here. So let's go ISBN 1-56833-064-2. If you'll look in a book, it's got what's called an ISBN number. I don't know what that is exactly, but there's a number. Numbers every book. ISBN 1-56833-064-2. Put that number down there, and I think Amazon.com or somebody can probably use that ISBN number, locate a copy for you, and I think you'll be glad that you did. Now, let me give you your mid-course reminder here and remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. For those of you that are online, go to your computer and then click on to georgegordon.org. That's our website, georgegordon.org. And then click onto the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about The Tyranny of Experts. It's a short story or an article that is written and was published in the Psych News, P-S-Y-C-H-N-E-W-S International. It was published in July of 1998 in Volume 3, Issue 2. The author is Morris E. Chaffetz, M.D., entitled The Tyranny of Experts. Boy, does this guy hit the nail on the head. And as I've said before, if we didn't have these insiders who would tell us what's going on in the inside, you and I would never find out, never would know. Fortunately, from time to time, one of them blows the whistle and says, hey, let me tell you what's going on here. Okay, let me tell you. And it's all bad for us, and it's all good for them, but it's not so good for us. And so what it does is it gives us an opportunity to take evasive action. If you're happy with the status quo, stick with the program without any changes. If you're not happy with the status quo, then maybe you want to make some changes here. Now, there's a mythology of science. You know, we're all of us, we believe in science like it's God. In fact, science is God, and science has taken the place of God and replaced religion. Not that religion necessarily had all the truth and all the answers. God had the answers, the Bible has the answers, but religion doesn't. And the religious people, they pick up the Bible, and like Winston Churchill, they see the facts from the scripture, and then they fit those facts to fit their predetermined position. They believe in Christmas, Easter, New Year's, and when they read Jeremiah 10, they twist Jeremiah 10 to fit their position. They see the flood account in Genesis 6, 7, and 8, and then they twist those facts to fit their position. Sometimes they just ignore whole statements. And in re-editing the Bible, starting in 1880, the religious people now, they have written 14 new editions to the Bible. And they have omitted 64,000 words from the original text, and they have changed thousands more of the scriptures themselves. So that it fits, it lines up. It's like sodomites fitting the Bible, fitting the facts of the Bible to fit their lifestyle. And many of these sodomites are religious people who go to church. I mean, it's like Bill Clinton walking out of church with a Bible under his arm on his way to the Oval Office to meet Monica Lewinsky. It's hypocritical. It's unethical. It's as phony as a $3 Federal Reserve note, but that's the way people are. And in fact, God said that the human beings, the mind, you know, the human mind, is desperately wicked. I can relate to that. Human beings are motivated by five motivators. I mentioned this to you a little earlier. I said vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Vance Packard wrote a book back in 1958. It was called The Hidden Persuaders, in which he outlines this vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. He says this is what every salesman is taught in sales school to exploit. And so I'm a salesman, and as a salesman, I know that what I'm after here is vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. When you're trying to sell me something, I'm saying to myself, well, is this guy appealing to my vanity, my jealousy, my lust, my greed, and my fear? And the answer is, yeah, that's what he's doing. You want to buy in Bellwood Estates. Real estate always goes up, it never goes down. The stock market is a safe bet for the long haul. Invest for the long haul in the stock market for your future. All of those statements are as phony as $3 bills. False. Lies. Didn't work that way. I tested all of them, I can tell you right now. Didn't work for me, and I don't believe for a minute it's going to work for you. But don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. Get out there and get after it. If you need to reinvent the wheel, get to it. Now, my old daddy told me one time, he said, son, the best teacher in life is experience. You cannot beat experience. But he said it's a god-awful hard way to learn. If there's any way that you can learn from the experience of others, by all means avail yourself of it. Then he went on a step further and he said, son, the next time you get some hair up your ass and you've got some lame-brained experiment that you want to take on, come and ask me first how it worked when I tried it, and I'll tell you. I didn't follow his advice, but he was right. You see, we think that the old-timers, see, you people, you young people are sitting out there saying, why, this guy, why he doesn't even know how to turn on a computer. And you're right, I don't. And I'm not even going to waste my time learning. I got a man in here that I hired to do that. And when I need the computer turned on, I say, Dirk, go turn on your computer. Get me this information. And he goes out and he does it. I'm the master, he's the servant. He follows my instructions. Now, without him, I couldn't find this information on the Internet, but I just hire somebody else to do it. But I want to tell you that there's nothing out there that goes on in the world today that I haven't already tested. And I tested Flo's Whorehouse. I can tell you how the whorehouse works. I've been in the bars, and I can tell you how to pick up a chick off the bar stool. I know how that one works, too. I know how to drink. I'm an old Jack Daniels whiskey drinker. I can drink scotch, drink whiskey, tequila. I can drink it with or without the worm. I mean, I'm experienced. I'm an experienced drunk. I can tell you how alcoholism works. I'm a smoker, ex-smoker. I can tell you how smoking works. I've been in business. I can buy, I can sell, I can trade. I know how to do that. At one time, I had 28 credit cards in my left pocket, left rear pocket. I had my wallet in my right pocket, and I had my credit cards on the other side. I tested the credit card program. I understand credit cards. I was in the real estate business. I know all about leverage, boys and girls. I can buy a building on leverage. I can take distressed property. I can make money on it, and I can lose my ass. I've tested both sides of it. I can tell you right now how that works. I bought and sold land, bought and sold houses, renovated and remodeled houses. I'm pretty, you know, I don't know everything about real estate, and I don't pretend to. I don't know everything about insurance, but I've had all kinds of insurance policies. I paid the premiums. I put in the claims. I know how insurance works. And so the bottom line is, as my old daddy told me, he said, you come and ask me, and I can tell you how that works, and you can learn from my experience. Now, if you need to learn from your own experience by reinventing the wheel, by all means, get after it. And most of you will have to do that. Most people cannot learn from the experience of others around them. They have to do it themselves. And that's why God has created the world the way he has. So if you're wondering why God doesn't intervene and stand the Empire State Building on its antenna to show you that he's God, if he did it in the morning, you wouldn't believe it. You would take those facts and twist them to meet your preconceived opinions, which is what you've done all of your life, and you're not going to change in the morning. So he's content to sit back and let you live your life and do your thing. Ultimately, you will die, go into a hole in the ground. He'll bring you up in the resurrection, and then he will say to you in the judgment, Bobby, did you learn anything from that? Sally, did you learn anything from that? You know, that premarital pregnancy, that little binge that you had down in Tijuana, you know, with your boyfriend, you know, did you pick up on that? Did you learn anything? Now, some of us learn from other people's mistakes. I'm old enough now that I concentrate on other people. I'm always watching other people. I want to see how this comes out for you. I'm watching you people with your fiat paper currency sitting on the sideline. I'm watching you bail the banks out. I'm watching your elections. I'm just watching. I'm not doing. I'm just watching. And then as I see your successes, I will emulate those. And as I see your failures, I'll avoid them like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, from my personal experience, let me suggest that you follow that lifestyle and that piece of advice because it works well for me. I can learn so much more. I can avoid so much trouble. And as I tell my students, you can stay out of more trouble than you can get yourself out of after you get into it. So if there's any way that you can stay out of trouble, do it. Now, this mythology of science is a trouble. Solomon was a great scientist. He did a lot of scientific experimentation. And he conducted a lot of scientific tests, and they're recorded in the Bible. Believe it or not, the Bible is a science book. I know your preacher says the Bible is not a science book. He's lying to you again. The Bible's full of science. God is a great scientist. You know, people that create universes, create solar systems, create life forms, are great scientists. They're great biologists. I can't think of a greater biologist than a guy that creates life. There are great biologists out there that observe the life that somebody else created. But when it comes right down to the greater of the two biologists, I'd say the guy that created the life is greater than the biologist that observes the life once it's been created. Now, many of us have a rudimentary familiarity with the scientific method. As children, we learn that science is a way of discovering new information about the world through direct observation. And we've been taught that science performs these observations objectively, even though a scientific experiment begins with a speculation or a hypothesis about the outcome. The goal of scientific experimentation is not the outcome, but rather it is the truth that comes from the outcome. So if we were honest and objective, we wouldn't be concerned about the outcome. We'd be concerned about the truth of the outcome. Now, to a child, the idea of testing reality without having a particular goal in mind sounds highly plausible. Children themselves are natural scientists. When a baby plays with matches, for example, his goal is not to light a fire, but rather to find out what causes these funny-smelling sticks to do what they do. It's curiosity. And when children open a cabinet and pull out everything inside, they are not doing that to create a mess. They're doing that to experience the pure joy of discovery. Most people's view of science is colored by their visceral memory of this pleasurable and uncomplicated state of learning. Even people who study science as adults often maintain a childlike belief in the objectivity of science and in its ability to sort out the confused messages of the world to find the truth. Now, let me interject something here. The objective of science is not truth. The objective of science is persuasion. What science is trying to do is to persuade you that our hypothesis is correct. So when the astronomer is looking through his telescope, and he's looking at the far-flung reaches of space, and he's watching all these stars and planets, one thing and another, he's not doing that objectively. He's doing that subjectively and with the intention of persuading you that his theories are true, accurate, and correct. That's why he came up with the Big Bang Theory that I showed you last time or the time before as a phony, as a $3 bill. Let me show you how phony it is. I'll just take a minute here. When we're looking at the universe out there, you and I all went, you know, we all went to school, remember? And we learned that there's two laws, one of entropy. It's called the laws of thermodynamics, and that there's been no past eternity of matter, that matter's all running down. So we're looking out here and saying, oh my God, here's all this matter, it's running down. How did it get started? So the evolution scientist, you know, we'll call him a scientist now, he comes along and he says, okay, now here's the way this happened. A long, long ago and far, far away, all the mass and matter in the universe was compacted into a dot smaller than the period at the end of this sentence. And it exploded. And it exploded with so much force and velocity that what you see today is the result of all that mass and matter exploding. It's called the Big Bang. Big Bang. Big Bang Theory. Now here's what's wrong with it. It starts with mass and matter. He's telling you that mass and matter has always existed, that the two laws of thermodynamics are false. That all mass and matter has pre-existed. There is no God, there is no creator, but there is mass and matter, which has always existed in the form of a dot at the end of this sentence. Tiny, to be sure. but always existing without a doubt. The preexistence of matter is contradicted by the laws of thermodynamics. Now, in the Bible, a guy by the name of God, you know, we call him God. I don't know what his name is, but we call him God. He comes along and says, let me explain this to you. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning, in the beginning, in the start of this, God created the heavens and the earth. Mass and matter didn't exist. They came into existence because God created it. Now, I know you're going to sit there and say, but I don't understand how you can get mass and matter out of nothing. I don't either. I didn't pretend to. I'm just reporting two facts. On the one hand, the evolutionist comes along and says mass and matter has always existed, and on the other hand, the creator comes along and says mass and matter has not always existed. I created it. You can believe whatever you want. Whatever makes you feel good. It's what you're going to do anyway. So get after it. But just so that you've got an alternative here, scientifically we know that mass and matter has not always existed. This is the conundrum. We can observe it, and it's running down. And God comes along and says, I'm the guy that built it up. It's running down. The sun is burning out. In 100,000 years, the sun is going to go out. And they're talking about billions and billions of years into the future. Here's what's going to happen. These people can't count. There isn't billions and billions or millions of years left for planet Earth. 100,000 years is it. You know, as they say down at the card room, read them and weep. And the sun is burning up at the rate of 5 feet per hour. 120 feet a day. It's 750,000 miles in diameter. Divide it out, do the arithmetic. 100,000 years, we're all toast. Now that fits with the biblical explanation. What we can observe, what we can weigh, taste, touch, smell, feel, you know, and know, it fits with the scripture. It doesn't fit with the science at all. And it isn't that science is bad, it's phony science that's bad. Phony science. You know, if somebody's got something intelligent to say and make us an intelligent observation, well, let's listen to it. But, you know, mass and matter have not always existed. The Bible still tells you that. And science tells you that. And evolution comes along and says, don't you believe it? You believe that all the mass and matter in the world was compacted into a period no bigger than the period at the end of the sun. Well, learned that in school. So did you. Now, these are experts. And then you and I have to choose which experts that we want to listen to. And I'm sitting here saying, you know, I think God is a pretty good expert. And the science in the Bible fits with the science that we can observe in the laboratory. And what we can't expect, or what we cannot demonstrate in the laboratory or the laboratory, as you English people call it, is false. It's false science. Let's stick with what we can see, hear, taste, touch, and smell. Most people's view of the science is colored by their visceral memory of this pleasurable end. The basic tenet of science is objectivity. In tests of new drugs, for example, biomedical researchers use double-blind studies so that neither the study participants nor the investigators know who's getting the real treatment and who's getting the placebo. Double-blinding is meant to insulate studies from the expectations of those involved and from self-fulfilling prophecies. For example, the possibility that study participants may consciously or unconsciously try to please the researchers by espousing the desired response, and the expectations of the investigators themselves, who may consciously or unconsciously try to influence the study's outcome to prove their hypothesis. That's why people stuff ballot boxes, is because they're not objective and they're not looking for an objective result. They're trying to elect somebody. They've got a predetermined agenda that they want to fulfill. Well, human beings do that all the time. It isn't just politicians and poll workers stuffing ballot boxes. It is white-smocked scientists taking public money, eating at the public trough, and trying to persuade us, because they're the experts, that what they're telling us is true, accurate, and correct, when in fact, it's a damn lie. That's the bottom line. Double-blinding is one of the procedures that makes science appear scientific to everyone, including scientists. But procedures like double-blinding are ultimately part of the mythology of science, the powerful belief system that puts science purportedly above the motivations of the human heart. Even if scientists were not motivated like the rest of us by personal needs and goals, science by its very nature cannot be objective or goal-less. Confirming a theory by observation requires the experimenter to devise procedures that will favor the theory's plausibility. Research on anything will yield findings that are a reflection of and limited by its procedures for observing or for measure. This principle is simple to understand. If I'm colorblind and I want to paint a picture of an autumn landscape, for example, by painting, my painting will lack the distinctive red hues that characterize a certain maple tree. If I'm quickly sorting change in my pocket by size and color, I may not notice that I have several Canadian pennies or dimes among my American pennies and dimes. Both of these deviations from objective reality are not malicious. In one case, I'm prevented from seeing what I miss because I'm colorblind. And in the other, I simply am not interested in the distinctions between Canadian and American pennies. These are what I call inherent biases. They're not malicious of and by themselves, but merely part of the limits of observation. We don't see what's really there. Understanding the typical blind spots and the inattentiveness of the scientific experts is critical. Science will always have a role to play in interpreting the world, but not the role of a soothsayer. Scientists, economists, politicians, lawyers, preachers have a view that they want you to believe, and they present their views. And they say, I've got it. This is it. Believe it. And in order to persuade us to believe it, they oftentimes do tests, or at least they claim they did the test. They claim they did the measurements. They claim they did the study, when in fact they may have or may not have. So when Merck does a test on their drug, their test, their study is biased in favor of the drug. They want that drug to succeed. They want that drug on the market. They want that drug to cure cancer, to cure, to do what they say it will do. Now, what really happens is it kills 50,000 people, and then it has to be withdrawn from the marketplace. If someone actually took that drug out and tested it for 5 or 10 years, and they tested it on real people, and then they gave us an objective result called truth, then we would know whether the drug actually works or not. That isn't the way the game is played. The experts are Merck. The experts are the doctors. The experts are the ones that design the study, that design the tests. They're not objective at all. We believe they are because they tell us they're objective. They're not objective, they're subjective. And they don't tell us that they're subjective. I'm out of time again. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal that tells us our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.